guys, which suggests that the planet is too warm for large-bodied mammals in the absence of the planetary air conditioner, with an Arctic that is ice-free in the summers. McPherson predicts rapid, dramatic changes. Earth will heat up quickly, he says. Consider, for example, a relatively simple example from the realm of physics. Slightly more than 79 calories are required to convert 1 gram of ice at 0 degrees centigrade to 1 milliliter of water at 0 degrees centigrade. But once the ice is converted to water, adding the same amount of energy, that's freezing, by the way, or just above freezing, zero centigrade, adding the same amount of energy increases the temperature of that water to slightly more than 79 degrees centigrade. He then goes on to imagine that on the scale of the Arctic Ocean. Without any ice, he says, in the Arctic to absorb energy, the energy will be absorbed by the dark ocean water. Even a tiny bit of ice provides a tremendous buffer to runaway heating by the ocean, hence the planet. Heat moves from the warm equator to the cold poles of the Earth via the atmosphere circulation patterns and ocean currents, but due to human emissions of greenhouse gases, the planet system is warming. In the Arctic, this means that the warming is causing the sea ice volume and spring terrestrial snow cover to decline extremely quickly, thus exposing the darker underlying surfaces of ocean water and permafrost on land. These darker surfaces absorb more solar energy, and thus there is an amplification of warming of the Arctic at rates to 5 to 8 times faster than the overall warming average. That's quoting Beckwith. He says, this decreases the temperature difference between the Arctic and the equator, and thus decreases the heat moving from the equator northward, resulting in a slowing of the westward movement of the high-speed winds making up the jet stream. The jet stream becomes wavier, leads to an increase in the frequency, intensity, duration, and spatial extent, location, and variation, end quote. And if you're wondering what he means by that, that's why you have these huge winter storms. Ironic, isn't it? Global warming has let cold weather splash all over this area and over the United States. It's global warming because it's thermodynamics. And heat doesn't just melt ice and raise temperatures. Heat moves things. And heat moved the jet stream, made it all wavy, as you saw in that Superstorm Sandy map, and pushed cold air that should have stayed on the poles down into our winter. And there's another thing going on, departing from this article. The thermal haline circulation is weakening. And that means, well, thermal haline circulation, this means thermo is heat, haline means salt. When the Arctic ice freezes, it forces salt out. This is why the ice isn't salty. It makes the water under it heavier, because it forces the salt into it. There's more salt in solution. So that water being heavier drops below the other water, and it forms a current. And the current goes, and this is very simplified, current goes south, always has, goes past Europe, goes all the way to the equator, circulates back. And that's why you can have a Europe without being frozen over, because that warm water, which was formed into a stream, which initiates with the two dynamics of the dropping cold salt water and the rising warm water. That's why you can have an ice-free Europe. That's why Europe isn't covered with glaciers. And it's also the reason that parts of Africa are not as hot as they could be, because that cold water coming, that salt water, has flowed down in a vast stream, larger than the Amazon by far. This phenomenon is being messed up by the fact that the Arctic ice isn't there to form up and to force that salt downward into the circulation. So it's been messed up, that moderating stream, the thermohaline circulation. This means colder winters for a while on the east coast of the United States, some really severe freeze-ups, and it means much hotter summers. And I think that this coming summer is going to be one of those really hot summers, but we'll see, won't we? Now, I may be jumping the gun there, but that will be the ineluctable fate. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187, and John's on the air.
Yes, two writers that have, to me, added information about climate change are James Lovelock in his book Revenge of Gaia. In that book, he says, for survivability of of humans on this planet, the population needs to be about one-tenth of what it is now, that we need to not sequester carbon by some simple farming techniques, but by humans keeping our footprints off of about one-third of the planet. And he says it's not going to be enough to a bicycle. It's about the only way to travel. We don't want to worsen the conditions is to walk or sail or row. And that's in the book Revenge of Gaia. As far as things like methane bursts, I first became aware of that through Scientific American and Peter Ward. Peter Ward is at the University of Washington. He's written several books on past climates and what we can expect in terms of methane. One of them is Under a Green Sky. In terms of our own future, one of his most recent books is The Medea Hypothesis, where he puts forth Earth is not Mother Earth, it's Medea, the mother who killed her children, which would go along with, let's say, sixth extinction events.
Well, that's the point I'm trying to make here, is that we are on that slippery slope to extinction. And as another caller said, we're over the falls. The trigger has been pulled. We're on our way. And so now it's a case of dealing with what's actually happening, realizing that the U.S. government, whatever it says in favor of the oil companies, is actually mobilizing to deal with the fact that we're going to have a gigantic catastrophe. And I would like to see a last-ditch effort, something, well, let a thousand flowers bloom, as Mal said, but I would like to see at least heat-trapping contrails be banned over the night skies.
Yeah, well, James Lovelock was, in 2006, at that point, all fossil fuel use should have been halted for any process.
True that, but it wasn't, and so here we are.
Yeah, Kevin Anderson, who holds James Hansen's position in the United Kingdom, said that the roughly 5 degrees centigrade rise by mid-century is not going to be an end point. It's just a pass-through point. And James Hansen, in his book, Storms of My Grandchildren, says the pass-through point is to a bone-dry, rocky planet in a nearer future than we would like to think. And so that's what I called in to talk about with those several.
Well, thank you very much. Now, the Revenge of Gaia, available at, it's available here at the Union Store Powell's Books in Portland, Oregon. You can also get it on various internet sites. It's called Earth's Climate Crisis and the Fate of Humanity by James Lovelock. Let's see, they're selling it for $12.81 on paperback and various, you can get it cheaper used. Thanks for that call. Remember to call 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. The point I'm making is that the trigger has been pulled, and we need to get control of our out-of-control imperial corporatist fascist governments. Basically, we need to banish them and start over. And we need to do what we can to preserve life and to deal with the fact that this crisis is coming. By the way, one of the reasons I brought up the Ebola crisis is that that is a zoonotic disease, which is also predicted under global warming. Organisms which are stressed, this came from bats. The bats are under stress. They're more easily caught for food. People have been snacking on them in Guinea. And it would appear that they were the animal source, the zoonotic, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right, it might be zoonotic, source for Ebola. This sort of thing is going to happen more. 503-231-8187. And Brian is on the air.
Oh, hi, Teresa. Just I'll be brief.
All right.
I hate to keep talking about books, but the one book everybody should read now, it's not an overnight, it's not something you go to bed and sort of read in a night. There's a lot of work to reading it, but it's called The Coming Plague by God. Hold on a minute. But it basically gives the history, Laurie Garrett, and it gives the history of how the planet's been abused from, the start of the 20th century, and the scientists. It's really detailed, and basically that the Earth has its own defense mechanisms and we're starting to disturb them. And if we keep it up, we're screwed. So that's one of my, you know, you were talking about Ebola before, and this covers all manner of diseases and how
the coming plague, newly emerging diseases,
defenses against what we throw at them. So that would be my recommendation.
All right.
The coming plague.
Newly emerging diseases in a world out of balance by Laurie Garrett.
Yeah, that's it.
All right.
Great.
That's another $12.
As I say, it's heavy going, but it's worth it.
Oh yes, I think books are very important in breaking propaganda, for one thing. And again, pardon me for repeating myself, but the reason I'm bringing this up, one reason, is that we've got a government, and we have governments around the world, which are first interested in control. We need to brush them aside. This is our world. It is not the world of the billionaires. This is your life. It is not the life of the Walton heirs. You know, all of this sort of problem, even to, if I have time, I'm going to explain why the amount of I'm not kidding. The amount of oxygen in the air is going to decrease in the upcoming years. And people like the Walmart heirs who've, you know, use their brilliant brains for doing nothing except being born and getting billions of dollars, they're going to live in special places. And if there's not enough oxygen, it'll be piped in. And if everyone's dying around them, they won't care. This isn't a crisis for the fraction of the 1% that is running everything. But we should limit wealth. I'll just leave that out there. Number to call, 503-231-8187. Been talking about how the methane apocalypse, which is on us, this is the very first, these are the first days of the methane apocalypse, is going to change everything. It's going to cause very rapid heating. It's not going to be mid-century. It's coming up in the next few years, in my opinion. Because we are seeing, I mean, there's been an acceleration in the acceleration of information about effects of climate change. These storms, the superstorm Sandy, these derechos, which used to happen once every 50 years and now happen every single year several times. This sort of thing was not supposed to happen for 100 years when this information was first coming out a decade ago. Now it's here. And as Scientific American was saying about the IPCC report, it's too conservative. This is happening now. And this sort of thing happens even on a geologic scale so rapidly that without an immediate change of attitude and tactics, and maybe even with an immediate change of attitude and tactics, we're doomed. To put it frankly, to put it succinctly, that's a doom we're looking at. And I think we might have some chances of dealing with it if we mobilize now in various ways. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. The fall off in ice volume in our northern ice cap is so fast, is going to bring us to zero very quickly. According to current data, 95% confidence the Arctic will have completely ice-free summers by 2018. That's 4 years. That's not 40 years. Over hundreds of millennia, this is quoting Dar Jamal, who is quoting scientists who actually know what they're talking about, Arctic permafrost soils have accumulated vast stores of organic carbon. Now we're getting to the methane. An estimated 1,400 to 850 petagrams of it. I said, okay, gigatons, petagrams, however you want to say it, planetary amounts. It's about half of all the estimated organic carbon stored in Earth's soils. In comparison, about 350 petagrams of carbon have been emitted from all fossil fuel combustion and human activity since 1850. When the trigger's pulled on that, well, back to the article, in the atmosphere, methane is a greenhouse gas that on a relatively short-term time scale is far more destructive than carbon dioxide. It is 23 times as powerful as CO2 per molecule on a 100-year time scale and 100 times more potent, and this is the important part, when it comes to heating the planet on a 20-year time scale, and the Arctic permafrost onshore and off is packed with the stuff. The seabed is offshore permafrost, but is now warming and melting. We are now seeing great plumes of methane bubbling up in the Siberian Sea, millions of square miles where methane cover is being released. As Truthout previously reported, and according to a study published in Nature Geoscience last fall, twice as much methane was as previously thought is being released from the East Siberian Arctic Shelf, a 2 million square kilometer area off the coast of northern Siberia. Its researchers found that at least 17 teragrams, that's 1 million tons of methane, are being released, that's now, are being released in the atmosphere every year whereas a 2010 study had found only 7 teragrams heading into the atmosphere. And I might add, it's bad enough in 2010. According to a NASA research report, is a sleeping climate giant stirring in the Arctic? Quoting, over hundreds of millennia, Arctic permafrost soils have accumulated vast stores of organic carbon, an estimated 1,400 to 1,850 petagrams. There's that word again. And so we're talking about a billion metric tons. That's about half of all the estimated organic carbon stored in Earth's soils. In comparison, about 350 petagrams of carbon have been emitted from all fossil fuel combustion and human activity since 1850. Most of this carbon is located in thaw-vulnerable topsoils within 10 feet of the surface. In other words, very subject to warming. Outbursts of methane from the seabed and or ice from the Greenland ice sheet are liable to cause tsunamis in the North Atlantic. How do they cause tsunamis? Because they explode all at once under the sea. The water heads where it heads. Because tsunamis, well, don't know what to say about that. Returning to the article, the NASA study highlights the discovery of active and growing methane vents up to 150 kilometers across. A scientist on a research ship in the area described this as a bubbling as far as the eye can see, in which the seawater looks like a vast pool of seltzer. It's happening. And if you hear someone denying global warming, oh, well, depends on how much power they have, what you decide to do. Let them babble on. No one believes those guys. Or if they're convincing an audience, then why don't you turn to this article by Dar Jamal in Truth Out, because it has the facts. And I would say, after studying this as carefully as I can, given my limited resources and abilities, over the last 10 years, this is the best article I've seen, and this really puts it together. And incidentally, I haven't become an alarmist because of this article. I've decided that the alarm needs to be pulled some time ago. This article is the stuff. It's really good. Once again, Dar Jamal in Truth Out. Number to call with your comments, 503-231-8187. And Jack is on the air.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes. Very faintly, though, so you might want to get closer to the mic or speak up.
Yeah, okay, I can pick up. I'm not going to be using my hands for the next minute or so. Very, very nice of you to be going so deeply into the scientific aspect of these things. I think people need to know this. This whole issue is far too superficial. People are using information that's just bubbling at the surface, as it were.
So to speak.
The younger Dreyfus that you mentioned, that is a remarkable epoch.
Younger Dreyfus, but I kind of like the idea of a younger Dreyfus, but go ahead.
Well, Dreyfus, I'm sorry, younger Dreyfus. But that's a remarkable epoch. And in studying it, the most fascinating aspect about it is that it came just as the climate was departing from the last glacial period into the Holocene. And as this ice sheet slipped off, if this is the theory that you're going with, rather than the meteor or comet crash theory, which is also plausible, but anyway, if this is the theory you're going with, that the Laurentide ice sheet slid off, flooding so much fresh water across the Atlantic that it disrupted the thermohaline circulation, the ultimate effect was that it plunged the planet back into another ice age for a short period of time before it recovered again.
Not within a human scale.
Pardon me?
Not within a human scale.
Not on
that sort of fluctuation might occur, but not within our lives.
Oh, no. What I'm saying is that the point that I'm going to make is this, that because we're at the end of the Holocene, in what I call the late Holocene thermal maximum, that it's much more likely that we're going to see an ice age as the result of all these climatic changes that we're seeing now.
Okay, you have no idea what you're talking about.
This is in the paleoclimate record.
I'm sorry, but this is just bunk. This is supported by Shell Corporation. When you listen to George Norrie in the middle of the night, you're not listening to an expert.
In the paleoclimate record.
This is BP's line. This is Shell's line.
I'm not talking about BP or nobody.
This is not 95%, 98% of the scientists who actually study this say that we're going to lose the ice cap and that these horrific changes are going to take place.
And the result will be the next ice age.
No, it won't.
Well, I think it will be.
Absolutely cannot be. Well, I challenge you to look up a thing called thermodynamics.
There's a lot of literature on this. There's a lot of literature on this.
There's a lot of literature on it, and it's all crap. Hello? Number to call, 503-231-8187. Here's what we're talking about. Crop failures. Crop failures mean starvation. Crop failures, a worldwide increase in the price of food, widespread starvation, conflict through much of Africa and Asia, and that's just for a start. We're seeing the start already, but without intervention, the situation could decline rapidly over the next decade. There will be attempts to cool the Arctic to keep the methane and carbon dioxide from explosively escaping from the terrestrial permafrost and marine sediments. In the transitions, many governments will fall, and martial law will be implemented in many countries as there is a resource scramble for ever scarcer fresh water and food. This is how bad it is. This is, as I was saying, this is the disaster that the government has bought so many bullets for. Those bullets are going to be aimed at you and me. How about we overthrow those thugs now so we don't have to suffer that fate? And I think I got enough time to talk to Anita.
Hello?
Hello.
I just wanted to point out that considering that the House 10 days ago, apparently it was reported on Amy Goodman's Democracy Now!, voted to cut all funds to study climate change and wanted the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and National Weather Service to study only severe storms and forecasting those. This is grim stuff. Nor was that all that widely reported. That is precisely under these circumstances what we do not need. Thank you, Teresa.
Thanks for calling.
Bye.
My number to call, we don't need to call the number right now. You stay tuned for more of the Incomparable Radio Zine. You've been listening to Press Watch. We had a special one-hour special. And, the rest of the programming that you will hear this morning is also special. And that's why you support KBOO Radio. If you're not a member, why not look us up at kboo.fm and click that tip jar and join up. It's pretty easy. And that's, you know, thousands and thousands of people have done so. And that's why we're on the air. And that's why we can say the truth instead of hiding from it or dumbing it down. And all the ships at sea.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 1 minute before 10 o'clock. Great Press Watch show there. And coming up in about 15 minutes, Flashpoints will take you away with an in-depth look today at U.S.-supported war crimes by Rwanda in the Democratic Republic of Congo. And two rivers in northern Idaho are on the new list of endangered rivers released by the conservation group American Rivers. At 11 today on Between the Covers, host David Naiman speaks with writer Kyle Miner about his novel Praying Drunk. And at 11:30, Words and Pictures previews a brand new gathering of cartoonists, illustrators, printmakers, and other creators taking place this weekend at Portland's Norse Hall. But first, it's Air Cascadia up next with headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. Thank you, KBOO members, for your ongoing support for this community radio station. If you are not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today.
Our jails and prisons have become overcrowded with people suffering from mental illness. Many people incarcerated are also addicted to drugs and alcohol. What treatment is being provided? Tune in to Prison Pipeline April 14th to hear Doyle Smith of Dual Diagnosis Anonymous of Oregon talk about the need for treatment programs in our jails and prisons. That's Prison Pipeline April 14th at 6:30 p.m.
Where is your radio dial on Thursday afternoons from noon until 2? 90.7 FM is the place to be. Twice a month, DJ Charlie presents the World Beat Connection with the hottest Afro-Caribbean sounds in Portland radio land. Reggae, salsa, soca, New Orleans Afro-funk, Haitian compa and rara, and Antillean zouk share the airwaves with African highlife. Afrobeat, Congolese soukous, Malian blues, juju, and South African kwaito, among the other great styles. Traditional and modern expressions are all included. On alternate weeks, check out Top Rankin Reggae and Dancehall with Shocks of Sheba show, hosted by Teresa and Michelle. Any week, Thursdays at noon is sure to move ya.
Cascadia. Today is Thursday, April 10th, 2014, and you're listening to KBOO, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. We've got some headlines this morning. Developing stories, of course, the absurdity of the Cuban message crisis. The Twitter fiasco, of course, has kept us all entertained, but at the same time, it should be worrisome that the USAID people, and that being, of course, the umbrella for the CIA's activities, particularly in this southern hemisphere, have been long going and persistent. And we wonder why relations between the United States and Southern Hemisphere nations, Latin America, why relations are have been rocky over the past decades, and that is the reason why. It's a disingenuous claim that USAID, we're just here to help. Just a big, lovable, goofy, helping hand from the United States, more often than not with gun concealed in the other hand. That is exactly the problem. That's why we're looking at it. Also, it provides some laughs from time to time. And we had an interesting piece pop up in the New York Times. The Times has decided it, too, wants to get on board and get a piece of the Boston bombing action. Their piece, however, claims that Russians, those evil Ruskies, had played a role in that. And their role specifically being that they withheld critical information. Well, first up, we watch the U.S. Making claims against Russia again. This is something that plays well in the heartland and with people who don't ask too many questions or, in fact, no any questions at all. So, of course, stirring up more anti-Russian feeling is a good thing at this particular moment, and also getting on board with the ongoing investigation into the Boston bombing. The direction, however, that the New York Times report takes is one that is pretty much useless, because it's not so much information that Russia had about a jihadist plot as it is what the FBI was up to interrogating a man for 5 hours in his apartment in Florida, an interrogation which left the interrogee dead and killed in a manner that would suggest a great deal of bloodshed. And yet, in the forensic photographs they chose to publish, there is not a spot of blood left on the walls, even directly behind the head of the person in question, which is where the fatal blows were delivered. Something that New York Times elected not to delve into and not to ask those questions. But yeah, we definitely want to know what those Russians knew and when they knew it. Returning first, though, to headlines from around Cascadia. All the land is in Crook County, in and around Prineville. It is used for crops, including hay, grain, carrot seeds, as well as pasture for cattle. They are going to feel this. Here it comes. Everyone out there, we always love it. Oh, the lovely warm weather. Here comes the sun. Well, you know, here comes water rationing also, and water wars each year intensify hard feelings between farmers, people who have been accustomed to kayaking and canoeing on streams and rivers and lakes for years and return to find that there's not much in the way of stream, river, or lake to kayak and canoe on. So water rationing is a human term for drought, nature's way of telling us that we have too many people on too few acres. And although wet February and March eased some drought concerns in Crook County, the head of the Oshoko Irrigation District isn't sure whether he'll be able to make full deliveries to all 862 of his customers this year. That's a lot of water. That's a lot of people. Not all 862, of course, are farming intensely and using a great deal of irrigation, but water rights are very peculiar. A small farm, say 20, 30 acres, may have been running, for example, an organic operation for years that just evolved over the course of time into a going concern. That farm might not own the rights to the water in an aquifer underneath it, which it has been using to irrigate the land to a greater or lesser degree. It's not easy to switch over from traditional farming methods to dryland crops. And that is one everyone is feeling the struggle, from the agribusiness big boys down to the small organic farmers. And the message is dead clear. It's too many people. The pressure to produce food for so many people is deadening the environment in and around those areas which had been the most prolific, where we were accustomed to turning when we need something to eat. And this is, of course, you can count fish out of that something to eat equation, because they are on the verge of extinction. Okay, you might be able to find some fish, some salmon in some streams, but here's the thing. Once you've destroyed the habitat, you've destroyed the creature, giraffes